Apart from allowing us to listen to our favourite music, and The Naked Scientist, of course, hearing, as a sense, is fairly important.
Hearing is really our only long-range panoramic early warning system. So whether you're in the dark or walking along the street with your eyes open, you can hear sounds coming from all around you all of the time, and you're incredibly good at detecting when new sounds occur, which could signal some kind of threat. And so evolutionarily, it's clear why hearing is so important, because if you want to avoid being eaten or find something to eat, then being able to hear where new sounds come from is really useful to you.
That's Jenny Bisley from UCL. So how does this all work?
It's a $50,000 question.
Indeed, and we'll hear more from Jenny later. But before we look at how hearing works, we better look at what a sound actually is. Sounds are caused by vibrations. When something, let's say a drum, is beaten, the vibrations cause a displacement of the particles around it. And then, like ripples in a pond, this vibration travels outwards from the source in the form of a wave. Imagine a sound wave, up and down and up and down. There are really only two bits of information contained in one of these, what we understand as volume and pitch. How tall the waves get, which is the difference between the top and bottom, means it's a bigger vibration and it's a louder sound. The closer apart the wave peaks, the higher the frequency, which is what we experience as pitch. And the further apart these are, the lower the sound. But if a tree falls in a forest and no one hears it, does it make a sound? So this is where our ears come in. Professor Brian Moore at the University of Cambridge has been investigating how our auditory system works for 50 years. So he took me on a guided tour of our ear.
Sounds enter the ear canal and travel down to the eardrum, which is like a drum of a drum, and that causes the eardrum to vibrate. And in turn, those vibrations are transmitted through three tiny bones in the middle ear called the malleus, the incus, and the stapes. And these are the smallest bones in the body.
When I was in school, we called them the hammer, anvil, and stirrup because of their distinctive shapes.
And the third of those bones, the stapes,
that's the stirrup,
makes contact with an organ called the inner ear, which is also called the cochlea. The part that's concerned with sound is the cochlea. And the cochlea is encased in very rigid bone, but there's a small membrane-covered opening, and the stapes rests on top of that opening, and so the sound is getting in through that small opening in the bone. Now, the magic starts to happen inside the cochlea. That's where the analysis of sounds first takes place. Now, the cochlea is filled with fluids, and there's a kind of ribbon that runs along the length of the cochlea that's called the basilar membrane. And the basilar membrane is kind of rather flexible and wide at one end, and it's narrow and stiff at the other end. And because of those physical properties, each place along the membrane is tuned to a different frequency. So the end that's closest to the stapes is called the base of the cochlea, and that responds best to high frequencies. And the other end is called the apex, and that responds best to low frequencies. So there's a kind of analysis of the different frequencies that are present in the sound.
So we have the sound banging on the drum, the eardrum, and travelling along these three tiny bones before being transferred into the cochlea. On most diagrams, this cochlea looks like a snail shell, and inside is this basilar membrane, which separates sounds out to their different pitches. But before we even get to the brain, our ear has another trick up its sleeve, one we didn't know anything about until recently.
There's a very wonderful thing that's only really been discovered in the last 20 years, and that's an active biological mechanism that actually amplifies the vibrations on the basilar membrane. And this active mechanism depends on the operation of specialised types of cells called outer hair cells. And these outer hair cells behave like miniature motors, and they actually feed energy back into the basilar membrane and amplify the response. And they also sharpen up the tuning. So each place is much more narrowly tuned to a specific frequency than would be the case if you didn't have this so-called active mechanism. And this active mechanism is crucial for letting us hear very soft sounds. And the weakest sounds that we can detect produce a vibration of the eardrum that's only the size of the diameter of a hydrogen atom. It's really a very tiny vibration that we can detect, and this all depends on the operation of these outer hair cells. There are still many aspects of these processes that we don't understand, including this active mechanism in the cochlea. Although we know that it's there, exactly how it works is still not fully understood. But what we do know is that you can detect its effects relatively easily. And one remarkable thing is an effect called the cochlear echo. Well, when you put a sound into the ear, as a result of the operation of this active mechanism, sounds actually come back out of the ear that you can measure in the ear canal.
That's incredible. So it's not just our mouths making sounds, our ears are doing it, albeit very quietly too.
That's right. Our ears are actually generating sound. Another interesting thing is that this active mechanism is partly under the control of the brain. So the brain actually sends signals down to the cochlea to control the operation of the active mechanism. So even the mechanical vibrations produced on the basilar membrane are partly influenced by the brain. No one 20 years ago had even thought that that was a possibility, that the brain is indirectly controlling what we hear by controlling the operation of the cochlea.
So how does this information get transported into our brains?
Within the cochlea, there's another type of hair cell called inner hair cells, which are like the microphones of the ear. They're detecting these vibrations on the basilar membrane and converting them to an electrical signal. And that electrical signal, if it's strong enough, can lead to what are called nerve spikes or action potentials in the auditory nerve. The more intense the sound is at a given place on the basilar membrane, the more action potentials you get. And so information is signaled to the brain as a kind of digital code in terms of these patterns of action potentials in different neurons and how rapidly those action potentials are occurring.
Professor Brian Moore from Cambridge University there.